If one solution to aging would exist like a silver bullet, then Mother Nature would just discover that in the process of evolution. I think it's the next 10, 15 years is going to be super critical. And we need to survive, and not only survive, but manage our level of health, both physical and mental one. We're all going to live much longer than we expect. So now it's the time to refine and rediscover and revisit our view on our own health. It's time to take back responsibility.
Welcome to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast, where we meet the world's top experts to explore the secrets of health, mindset, longevity, and so much more. Are you ready to take charge of your existence and biohack your life? This show is for you. Please keep in mind, we're not dispensing medical advice and are not responsible for any outcomes you may experience from implementing the tactics lying herein. Are you ready? Let's do this. Welcome back to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Friends, it is so exciting to be back today with Sergey Young. His work is pretty much everything I'm obsessed with. The science of longevity and the realistic future of what that looks like. His book is absolutely mind-blowing and very inspiring about the developments that are currently happening and that are on their way when it comes to extending our health and our lifespan. So it was really an honor to be back here today with Sergey, and I can't wait to see all this future work, and I can't wait for you guys to check out this episode. The show notes for today's episode will be at melanieavalon.com/growingyoung. Those show notes will have a full transcript, so definitely check that out. There will be two episode giveaways for this episode. One will be in my Facebook group, IF Biohackers, Intermittent Fasting plus Real Foods plus Life. Comment something you learned or something that resonated with you on the pinned post to enter to win something I love. And then check out my Instagram, Melanie Avalon. Also find the announcement post there about this episode. And again, comment to enter to win something that I love. Hey friends, did you know that one of our largest sources of toxic exposure each and every day is through our skincare and makeup? It is so frightening the effects these compounds can have on our health. So we put these products on to help us look better, and yet they actually can be aging us, contributing to health issues, fertility issues, thyroid issues, mood issues, and ready for something potentially even more shocking? A lot of these endocrine disruptors are actually obesogens, meaning they cause your body to gain weight and make it harder to lose weight. That's right, your skincare and makeup may be hindering your weight loss goals. Europe has banned thousands of these compounds, and the US has banned around a dozen. There's even a loophole from the 1960s that allows companies to put whatever they want in their products, and they don't even have to tell you. That's why I am overwhelmingly careful about the skincare and makeup that I use. But here's the thing, it can be hard to find skincare and makeup that is non-toxic and actually works. And then on top of that, that actually has all the products you need. I have found two companies, I am obsessed with their standards and use them every single day of my life and cannot recommend them enough. That's Counter, formerly known as Beauty Counter, and Crunchy. Both of these companies have incredible standards when it comes to what they put in their products. You can truly feel good about using them, and they actually work. For Counter products, go to melanieavalon.com/counter. And for Crunchy products, go to crunchy.com. That's crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. New Crunchy customers can use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 to get 10% off. You'll also receive something special from me after your first order. I also highly recommend joining both of their loyalty programs. It's completely free to join, and with every purchase, you'll earn credit as well as other fun goodies. For all the latest updates, new products, specials, deals, and fun things for me, because yes, I love giving things away, get on my email list. That's at melanieavalon.com/cleanbeauty. You can also get text updates when you text skincare to 877-861-8318. That's skincare to 877-861-8318. So again, to shop with me and get a free gift from me after your first order, go to melanieavalon.com/counter and also crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. And new customers, use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 at Crunchy to get 10% off site-wide. And again, definitely join their free loyalty programs to earn credit on every order. Hey friends, exciting news. My Avalon X Spirulina is back in stock and now at a reduced price. Plus you get free shipping and my coupon code works on top of that sale price. Spirulina is honestly one of the most nutrient dense things that you can put in your body in a whole foods, easy to eat form. It's a blue-green algae, which is a complete vegan protein packed with an incredible array of nutrients. We are talking 100% of your daily hard-to-get vitamin K, 625% of vitamin B12, over 1,000% of vitamin A, 86% of chromium, 27% of vitamin B2, plus so much more, including iron, GLA, the powerful antioxidant superoxide dismutase, and even glutathione. In fact, spirulina is so uniquely nutritious that it was actually studied by NASA to support the astronauts. I searched high and low to find the very best spirulina out there. Ours comes from a wonderful, sustainable, clean, environmentally friendly production facility in Hawaii. Not Thailand, Hawaii. And then on top of that, we did our own third-party testing for over 70 pesticides, heavy metals, toxins, all the things. This is the cleanest spirulina out there. And with spirulina, you can simplify your supplement routine and support your nutrition in one easy step. The tablets are super versatile. You can swallow them whole, blend them into smoothies, crush them up, or honestly, just eat them like I do. And again, we were out of stock, but now Avalon X Spirulina is finally back in stock at a reduced price, and my coupon code MelanieAvalon works on top of that too. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to avalonx.us/spirulina and use the coupon code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off our new reduced price plus free shipping. That's avalonx.us/spirulina with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. If you're enjoying this show, it would mean the absolute world if you could take a moment and write a brief iTunes review. It helps so, so much more than most people realize. So thank you so much in advance for that. If you'd like to learn more about my show and what I'm doing and all the things, definitely get on my email list. That's at melanieavalon.com/email list. All right, without further ado, please enjoy my second conversation with Sergey Young. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the show. I am so incredibly excited about the conversation that I am about to have. It is with a repeat guest. That's how you know you have a good guest on the show. So a little backstory about today's episode. You guys might have heard the first episode I did with Sergey Young. His people first reached out to me about his new book that was coming out. And at the time, it wasn't out yet and a galley wasn't available, so I couldn't pre-read it. But I was so excited about Sergey's work that I just had to bring him on immediately. And for listeners, I will put a link in the show notes to that first interview that we did. But now we are back because Sergey's book is actually coming out in August. And friends, it is incredible. It's called The Science and Technology of Growing Young, an insider's guide to the breakthroughs that will dramatically extend our lifespan and what you can do right now. And for listeners on this show, we talk a lot about longevity. We talk a lot about lifespan. Usually I'm interviewing doctors and scientists and really going into that aspect of aging. And Sergey's book touches on all of that, but then it goes so much more beyond that into painting a very eye-opening view of what the future will actually look like when we implement these different lifespan techniques and science of longevity technology. And it really just blew my mind. There are so many things that we can cover. So Sergey, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Melanie. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
You know, one of the things I love talking to you because your excitement just shows through. You're just glowing. I mean, maybe that's what happens when you focus on longevity. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. Look, I'm genetically predisposed to like excessive level of optimism. So you just need to be careful. You always need to have someone skeptical beside me.
I love that. But that's actually something that you pointed out in the book was, you know, your history is not longevity the whole time. You've done a lot of investing and you talk about how you have a meter for a BS meter of sorts. So I was wondering, could you tell listeners who are not familiar with you a little bit about your personal story and what led you to writing this book today about the future of longevity?
Perfect. So I'm 49 and Well, the beauty of being involved in the field of longevity, you need to be healthy, happy, and look young. So that's the like a positive side effect of my mission. And actually, my mission is to change as many lives as possible. So I do appreciate the opportunity to spend 1 or 2 hours with you today, because this is the opportunity to share what we already discovered and what we managed to develop in the field of science and technology of longevity. The unfortunate reality, we all start our interests in the field of health and longevity with a wake-up call. And I had two. One was lung cancer of my father back in 2005. He survived, but the quality of his life has never recovered. And for me, it was the story of extremely high cholesterol level. They wanted me to take statin, but I realized there's so many ways to go around this without taking medication every day till the rest of my life. This is where the interest into longevity started to develop. I kind of thought, if I want to support this space, the development of all these beautiful technologies, which will make us healthier in a very affordable and accessible way, the best way to do it is to like a launch of investment fund, which I did. I'm a founder of $100 million Longevity Vision Fund. I have the most amazing job in the world because we're looking at 200 longevity technology companies a year to invest in 10 of them. So many doors from labs or so many beautiful minds from entrepreneurial talent open up to me. And well, it's been amazing. So I thought, if I spend time with the most brilliant minds in the science of longevity, and if I'm spending time with the best entrepreneurs in this field, I need to share it with the world. So that's the background. That's the idea behind the book. It's been an amazing 3 years journey. I did more than 40 interviews. I discussed human avatars with Peter Jackson, creator and co-creator of Lord of the Rings, Avatar, Hobbit, genome sequencing with George Church, organ 3D bioprinting of organs and organ regeneration with amazing woman with Martin Rothblatt, epigenetic changes with David Sinclair. So look, it's just, there's so many stuff that I learned. And well, this is what I put in the book.
No, it's absolutely incredible. And just reading your book, all of the names, like many that you just mentioned, and Lord of the Rings is actually my favorite movie series of all time. So reading the book, I was like, oh, it's all the people that I personally, people I've had on the show and the most brilliant minds that I'm just so fascinated by. And it's just such a wonderful, collective, in my opinion. I have so many questions for you, but I'm really curious. You said that, so you invest in about 10 companies per year, you said?
Yeah, so if you look at Longevity Vision Fund portfolio today, we have 16 companies and some of them have really amazing stories behind them.
What's the one you're most excited about right now?
Just a little bit of background. So I do believe that if we change the view of our body from biological perspective to more like an engineering one, this is where old car metaphor is relevant. So similar to the old car, we can extend resource of our body and mind if we can, for example, replace our organs. And that's why I'm very excited about a company called Lygenesis. They're based in Pittsburgh. What they do, they use our lymph nodes to regrow organs inside our own body. So they started with liver. Organ transplantation today is a huge problem. In the US, I think the waiting list for organ transplant is as long as 117,000 people today, and 17 people die every day just waiting for their donor. And the ratio of people who are okay with donating their organs and the people who need them is really unfavorable. And it's very expensive surgery. Like liver transplantation is $600,000 to $800,000, and you need to wait for a few months, and the probability of success is not really guaranteed. So what Lygenesis does is they split donor liver in 50 to 75 pieces. So here's the opportunity not to help kind of in one-to-one ratio, but like one donor liver can help 75 people. They use very simple laparoscopic operation to put this nucleus of the new liver in your lymph node. They obviously do treatment of that. And then in the course of 3 to 6 months, a new liver grows inside your body. So then, it picks up the function from your current liver, which is not working properly. And this is just amazing. And they've done so many trials with primates, with dogs, with pigs, and they just got FDA approval earlier this year. So they start human trials in the end of this year. And they will be able to help so many people to save their lives and then improve the quality of their life. What is more exciting is their next program is with thymus, this small thing inside our body, are responsible for our immunity. And it's what it does is it grows and it's working properly when we are young, like before age of 20 or 22, and then it starts to shrink because Mother Nature thinks that you've done with your reproductive program, it doesn't really need you. So if we will be able to regrow thymus inside our body, well, that's just the opportunity to renew ourselves, even to reverse aging. And all the trials that I know, which had an outcome of reversing aging, do age reversal with the impact of like -2 or -3 years, involve some growth hormones to regenerate thymus. So that's, I'm super optimistic about this whole thing.
So question about the liver, because the liver is often known as the organ that can regenerate itself. Does that mean that technology... Well, you talked about applying it to the thymus as well. Like, is it limited by certain organs that have that innate capability to regrow, or could it possibly be extended to different organs as well?
They're looking at more organs at the moment. Their next target is kidneys, I think. And they have more plans that I couldn't really release at the moment, but it's very exciting. I do believe that in 10, 20 years from now, within the near horizon of longevity, as I kind of say in the book, we will be able to regrow or replace or support so many organs. Actually, the two most difficult ones are heart and our brain.
Okay, with the brain, okay, because it feels like if you replace the different parts of your body, that it doesn't seem that it would affect your consciousness. But if you completely replaced your brain, do you think it would affect your consciousness?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Oh, look, and we're talking about something which can happen in 20 years from now, right? It's like having the conversation about internet and smartphones back in the year 2000. In my humble opinion, to the extent we can predict the future, I don't think replacing the brain is the main avenue that we will take. I think it's going to be just much easier to reproduce our brain, our thoughts, our memory in the virtual world. So it's going to be like, we're going to be backing up our brain like every month or so. And then if you want, you can exist as a virtual avatar or as a robotic avatar. And in fact, actually, my resolution for the next year is to create a virtual avatar of Sergey Young. So, and he's going to be working with me, doing Ask Me Anything events, speaking at conferences, spreading the word about healthy longevity and changing people's mindsets and lives. For the first 3 or 6 months, it's going to be his learning process. And then, you know, it can help me to like double down on my mission to make the world a better place. But this is really early stage. And we at LVF, at Longevity Vision Fund, we wanted to invest in human avatars. But we were struggling to find like a solution. Is it going to be robotic avatars in the future? Or it's going to be virtual avatars. And it seems to me that it's so much easier and more efficient to reproduce us in the virtual environment. So, and it's a pity to realize that we might be going into virtual avatar avenue. But I did make friends with Professor Tachi from Japan. He was the one, and I interviewed him for my book. He was the one invented the human avatar idea back in 1980, and he still calls it teleexistence. And we were looking at so many companies who reproduce us in the virtual and robotic world. So I'm very excited about this technology. Not for everyone, but like my idea is that it can actually support a lot of cross-generational wisdom transfer. So I would love to have an opportunity to speak to my grandfather. He's unfortunately passed away 25 years ago. But if I can spend like an hour of my time a month with his virtual avatar, I would still miss this time and continue to learn from his wisdom.
This is crazy. And I know for listeners, if this is the first time you're hearing of all this, it might seem a little bit out there, but I promise if you read the book, there's so much reality happening with all of this. So is it sort of like the difference between with the avatars, like having physical documents compared to like our cloud-based system now?
Yeah, just a little bit. Yes, exactly. And yeah, I agree with you. We shouldn't really shock the audience with the picture of far horizon of longevity. And this is the set of technologies which are going to be available to us in 25 to 50 years from now. And I do believe by that time, we would solve all these scientific and technological problems, but we would still need to solve like morality of immortality issues, all the ethical problems of today's world. So in addition to creating science and technology to extend our life, we would need to create life that we want to extend. So that's really far away. And as well as audience, I'm actually expecting that with combination of excitement and fear. But I can tell you and I can promise you there's something more immediate that we can do now or we're going to see and use in the next 10 years from now, like what I call a near horizon of longevity innovation. And this is more feasible, more kind of friendly, more ethically obvious. And the good news, it's more affordable and accessible. We will be able to help so many people. I'm not interested in developing like longevity solution for each. I'm interested in developing longevity solution for everyone who wants it.
Hi, friends. You guys know I am obsessed with safe, effective skincare. One of my favorite skincare brands of all time, which is USDA certified organic, yes, actually certified organic, is Purity Woods. And friends, I'm going to be completely honest here. I already had a few skincare brands that I loved when I first found Purity Woods. So I was like, okay, another skincare brand. It was going to take a lot for me to actually add something new into my routine. Oh my goodness. The second I tried Purity Woods, it became a complete non-negotiable. And when I interviewed the founder, Brian Vasily, on my podcast, that's when I learned why. Ryan discovered the astounding clinically studied benefits of organic maple leaf extract for the skin. Maple leaf extract contains antioxidant and hydrating properties that help soothe irritated or inflamed skin while also helping to plump, brighten, and nourish the appearance of your skin. So we're talking skin firming, anti-aging, all the things. It's sometimes even called plant-based Botox because of how effective it is. There are three of their products that I use every single day and night of my life. That would be their age-defying dream cream, which I use, yes, during the day, their age-defying night cream, which I use at night, and their hyperlift serum, which I use both morning and night. Every time I put these products on my skin, I just have this sigh of relief. They feel that good, they smell wonderful, I see the effects of my skin, and I just love them that much. And as you know, I am neurotic about having non-toxic ingredients. These products are incredible. You could eat them, but please don't eat them. And Purity Woods has an incredible offer for you guys. You can get up to 38% off at puritywoods.com/Melanie. Turn back time on the appearance of your skin with Purity Woods Age-Defying Dream Cream. Go to puritywoods.com/Melanie at checkout for up to 38% off. That's puritywoods.com/Melanie. I am obsessed with Purity Woods and I can't wait for you guys to try it as well.
Well, actually, yeah, speaking to that solution concept, and then you already spoke a little bit about age reversal, maybe we should define for listeners, in your opinion, what aging is, because I think, you know, some people think with this quest that it's about, you know, not dying. Some people think it's about aging backwards. Like if somebody was immortal, for example, what age would they exist at? So like, what is aging?
Yeah. Okay. So aging is a number of processes which starts in your body and mind actually from certain age. And I'll come back to like certain age thing, which Mother Nature starts because you are not reproductively relevant anymore. And obviously it's significant deterioration of all of these systems in your body. And like there's a famous framework that we all use called 9 hallmarks of aging. And just to give you an example of what is that. So some of that is related to our genetics. So it's like it's our genomic instability or DNA mutations or something that we call like genetic diseases. When we were unlucky in our genetic lottery. So that can happen and this can influence aging. Well, sometimes it's about you have the right like genetic combination. I'm obviously simplifying the things, but just for the sake of everyone, even without, you know, degree in biology, can understand that. Well, sometimes your genes are okay, but then the way they express themselves is not okay. So it's either, you know, change or certain damage of chemical structure of DNA, the way our genes express themselves. So that's called epigenetic dimension of aging as well. Sometimes there's small things in our cells responsible for like the whole energy in the cells called mitochondria. Sometimes they are not really working well, so that's they contribute to aging as well. Sometimes our stem cells, because of the age, we become a deficient of the stem cells in our body. And it's more and more than I can tell about different processes of aging. What we need to understand, it's not one single thing. So if we would have, or if one solution to aging would exist like a silver bullet, then it's either Mother Nature would just discover that in the process of evolution, or its brilliant human minds will discover this in the process of scientific research. So it's a combination of things. It's one of the most complex tasks and challenges that we ever been trying to solve in the overall human history. So then there's a lot of disagreement when aging starts. Some people say that it starts from the first day of your life. And I do believe I'm more conservative on that. I do believe it's somewhere between year 40 and 45, where consolidation and combination of different aging processes inside your body starts to manifest itself, and you kind of start to feel it in your biomarkers and the way you feel, the level of energy, and certain issues with your health. So then I just wanted to come back to your question about immortality. Well, the first thing, I'm not a fan of immortality. So I do believe that if you take out the death from the human cycle, life cycle, we're not going to be humans. So I'm not necessarily the guy who's working to make everyone's immortal. Moreover, I do believe that we will be able to add 10, 20, or probably by the end of this century, like 50 healthy and happy years to our life. And that's already a lot. Just to be precise, in the last 100 years, the average lifespan on Earth increase from somewhere around 40 years to like 75 years. So we almost double that. So this trend will continue. It's not like we have an option whether our lifespan will be increasing or not. Having said that, the maximum lifespan on Earth was always the same. So like the oldest people live to 120 or to 122, to be precise, thanks to this beautiful French woman who died somewhere around 20 years ago. So we've done a lot of preventing of early death, and this is what we are currently doing. And what will change in the next 10 to 20 years, in addition to preventing early death, like fighting with cancer, heart disease, with neurodegenerative disease, with diabetes, we will start to use technologies from near horizon of longevity, which is gene editing and therapy, regenerative medicine and organ regeneration and longevity in appeal, like new class of drugs, which will reverse aging, actually to start breaking this barrier of 122 years. So that this is fundamental. This is something new. We've never done this before. And it's only the latest advancement in science and breakthroughs in technology allows us to do this. And then my final and funny comment on immortality. Even if we reach that at certain point of time, and I don't believe it's going to be the case, it's not going to be like you're going to decide today if you're going to be immortal or not. It's going to be a series of your life extension decisions, like whether you want to extend your life by another 5 or 10 years or not. And that's actually a huge ethical issue. It's called suicide or playing God in so many societies around the world. And that's it. But again, it's really far away. I'm more interested in bringing the best of gene editing, gene therapy, organ regeneration, wearables, early diagnostic to the world, so we all can enjoy plus 10, plus 20, extremely healthy and very happy years.
Do you have a personal theory about why there is that sound barrier seemingly at age 120 or 122?
If you look at the nature, we do have few species which can live, well, up to 200 years, like Greenland whale. And also just a few species on Earth don't have like an aging mechanism embedded in them. So they like forever young, land with my name. And then if they die, it's either because of, you know, competitors or adverse external shocks, etc. So, but then I do think that Mother Nature was like planning us humans with a limiting belief of not necessarily being resourceful, like assuming that we have access to limited resources. So for us to continue to evolve as a species, then after we've done with our reproductive program, we would need to die to free up the space and resources to younger generation. Well, that's my idea. I'm not sure if this is right or wrong. We still don't have the answer to that anyway.
Is that like the altruistic theory?
Yeah, obviously it's continuation of my idealistic and super positive view of the world.
Well, moving forward to the different modalities and technologies that you're talking about. So gene editing, I would love to hear more about it. You talk in the book all about CRISPR and how it actually works. And this was the first time that I felt like I got sort of a sense of what was going on with that. But for listeners who are not familiar, so what is gene editing?
Yeah, I mean, in overall terms, well, there's so many things to talk about, but I'll just try to be as short and entertaining as I can be. So sometimes the whole or the part of our genomic setup is defective or missing. It can happen at the moment of birth, or it can change or mutate during our adult life. Any of these variations can disrupt how proteins are made in our body, and this in turn contributes to health problems or diseases. Okay, so that's how important our genetic setup is. So then roughly 20 to 30 years ago, we started to play around with this. So the first thing that we wanted to do is to sequence human genome. And it's just massive number of very complex things that we need to sequence. Like US spent, I think it was 13 years and $3 billion in the end of last century to sequence one human genome. It was a massive undertaking. They actually wanted to stop after year two, I think, because within the 2 years, they managed to sequence only 1% of human genome. Fast forward today, you can sequence them in just a couple of hours, and it costs roughly around $200. That's it. Well, this is how far we went. And then, so after we understood the way we construct it on a DNA level, the first technology came into the space. It's called CRISPR, but right now we have so many different technologies. We can do it inside human body. We can do it outside the human body. So I'll cover some of them, which I find very interesting. But the first technology to do like an alteration of our DNA was developed, and it's called CRISPR. This is actually like a genetic scissors who can cut and replace a part of your DNA. This is the simplest way to explain it. So then when it was developed 20 to like 25 years ago, as far as I recall, it was only available and tested on a handful of humans. So there was literally less than 10 people in the world who can afford to use CRISPR because they were about to die because of their extremely rare and severe genetic disease. So they had nothing to lose on this planet. This is where experiments started. Fast forward today, we all participating, hopefully in a very positive, I'm actually positive about that, in the genetic therapy experiment. Because Moderna, AstraZeneca, a lot of different COVID vaccines is a product of gene therapy. Imagine, and this is what we've done in the course of what, 30 years. What is brilliant about this whole thing, it makes us stronger as a species. I think I was just looking a month ago in the headline of one of the articles, and it says, Moderna vaccine has been developed in the course of 2 days. Can you imagine that? in like 100, 200 years ago, it took decades for us to develop vaccine. And right now, look at the COVID response in terms of testing, our ability to develop vaccines, our ability to roll out vaccines. We've done, like humanity, done an amazing job in this regard. And this is how far we went with our ability to influence our genetic setup. So what we can do is there's so many technologies which is there. So I told you about the CRISPR, which is basically like a genetic scissors. We just invested in a company. It's called Tessera, and it's been founded by Flagship Pioneering, one of the most prominent biotech funds in the world. They're based in Boston. So they've developed like a new technology, and they, rather than just replacing one gene, they can work on combination of genes. And this is very different because CRISPR is good like a scissors, right? Like cutting out the genes, but not in writing the new genes. And the Tessera approach utilize like a separate, it's called mobile genetic elements, which is segments of DNA, and they can jump and around our genome and make extra copies on themselves. So they can just literally write and rewrite our genetic code. So that's called gene editing. That's the whole thing. The other example, which I mentioned, like Moderna and AstraZeneca and, you know, all these vaccines, sometimes they use RNA, and this is like a separate missing link between DNA and how it translates the signals to our body. So they're basically using different vehicles like viruses to deliver proteins or genetic elements to our body. Or you can do like, if you speak to David Sinclair, the professor in Harvard Medical School and the author of New York Times bestseller, Lifespan, amazing book, amazing man with a beautiful mind and beautiful heart, you can actually even influence the gene expression. So one of the technologists says, okay, guys, we don't want to really work with DNA. It's too important. It's too fundamental. But let's just try to switch on or switch off some of the genes which are already existing. So that's called epigenetic reprogramming. But again, you know, I just don't want to bother you with a lot of details. But coming back to basics, first time in the history of humanity, we have an opportunity to alter and redefine our genetic makeup. And in addition to like COVID vaccines, we can work with rare genetic diseases. And while there's a special kind of diseases called rare diseases, while they're called rare, they're not that rare. 400 million people on Earth are suffering from rare diseases of genetic and non-genetic nature. So we have an opportunity to save lives and improve the quality of lives of these people. So I'm like super excited about this whole thing.
For listeners, I've had David Sinclair on the show twice, so I'll put links in the show notes to his books. Lifespan is one of my favorite books of all time as well. It's something that you actually pointed out about the genetics versus epigenetics. So I think this is kind of funny because I think most people not in the biohacking longevity sphere think genetics trump epigenetics. I think people in the biohacking longevity sphere often think epigenetics are more important than genetics. You talked in your book about how some people actually do theorize that genetics are actually more influential than epigenetics. So I don't know if it even matters, but between the two, do you think genetics or epigenetics are the driving factor in everything?
Yeah, well, I do think it's the epigenetic like an avenue. It's just one of the tools for us to make sure our DNA work. So then your choice is like try to influence that without touching DNA and just managing expression of that, switch on, switch off. Or you can try to handle this on genetic level. So in my terms, and again, I have 3 degrees, but none of them in biology. Closest I went to biology was chemical engineering, which is actually pretty helpful in our field. I do think it's just using epigenetic therapy is just one of the ways for us to make sure our DNA works properly without, you know, ignoring the fact whether we have some genetic mutations or not.
Major question about the advances that happened with the history of CRISPR and gene editing, because you talked about how, you know, they did 1% of the genome and now they've done the whole thing and we can do it really fast. How do we get those advances? Is it artificial intelligence that allows us to make advances so fast, or what's the timeline of all of this?
Yeah, it's everything related to computer power. And therefore, like the quantity of the changes, the magnitude of the changes there, help us to create artificial intelligence and mine a lot of data. And this is what genome sequencing and gene editing is about. So it's like, if you want to simplify the things, it's just enormous spike and exponential growth of computing power, data processing power, creation of artificial intelligence, which happened in parallel with decreasing the cost of it. So that's like almost everywhere we invest in longevity vision fund, within longevity vision fund, as a particular component of, you know, big data mining or artificial intelligence. Even if it's like affordable ultrasound devices, it's a company called Eco Imaging. And by the way, it's an interesting story. So ultrasound device in a hospital next door costs somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 for you, right? It does require doctors to operate with at least 2 years of education. And it's all done by human eyes. What Eco Imaging does, they created the device which costs $2,000, which is 50 times less than ultrasound device, like a non-portable ultrasound device machine. What it does, you do all the scanning, and it can be done by nurse or even by you if you are in an extraordinary situation. All the scans go to the cloud. Then it's pre-analyzed by artificial intelligence. And then it's you, the nurse, and doctor can receive like a 98-99% pre-analyzed set of scans, pointing out to a particular problem on your scans or your organs that you do there. So, like, is it a traditional medical device? Yes. Does it have all this amazing component of getting the health data and analyzing this and give an opportunity for human intelligence and artificial intelligence to coexist and cooperate? Yes, as well.
Are there checkpoints in place for the artificial technology, like for intelligence? Does it ever make errors? Like, is there the possibility with all of this exponential growth that artificial intelligence could, you know, draw the incorrect conclusions and then just run with it?
Yeah, I mean, there was a number of cases. They are outside biology, but like when it's people who are going to write the rules for AI, and obviously they have, you know, all these stereotypes and right and wrong paradigms behind that. But overall, I do think that we humans tend to see world in a very binary terms, like it's either black or white, one or zero. And we're so mutually exclusive in our thinking. So I do believe that the artificial intelligence and human intelligence will coexist, will co-integrate, both on a level of like a working and do like early diagnostic. And I'll give you an example of that. On the level of human brain AI integration. Remember, there's so many things that we thought are incompatible and cannot be integrated that we integrated later on. So if you look at, for example, imagine you've done an MRI. And well, this is what I've done. June 8th this year, it was my annual health checkup date. And I do think it's the most important date every year, the date of your medical checkup. My wife had a different idea on what is the most important day, if you listen to me. So what has happened in the last 2 years? So I've done full body MRI. And then it's not only radiologist who looks through my scan. First, it's done by artificial intelligence. And then radiologists check whether the conclusions are right and or is anything I need to be doing on the basis of this conclusion. So like, let's look at early stage breast cancer. So if you put radiologists under time pressure, and that's unfortunate reality for their work today in the healthcare system, again, for early stage cancer, not for the late stage, they're sometimes like 38% right in their understanding and their ability to detect early, very early stage of their breast cancer, okay? So that's the figure. Again, this is for amazing doctor, just under time pressure. But then, if you ask combination of human radiologists and artificial intelligence to analyze exactly the same scan, the outcome of this is 98% detection of early stage breast cancer. Imagine that. Well, this is amazing. And again, we're going to be coexisting with that. And we're going to leverage the best of both minds to do that. And this is very important because cancer is not a kiss of death anymore. It was the case 20 or 40 years ago, but not today. So if you do early diagnostic of cancer, then your like a probability of your recovery is from 90 to 100% for some of the cancer types. Imagine that. That's why I saved so many lives just by pushing people to do their annual checkups. And they called me up like, Sergey, you saved my life. And actually, after a few calls like that, this is when I decided to work on longevity. I thought there's nothing more important that I can bring to this world. If this is so simple, then I should leverage this to help billions.
I really applaud you for encouraging listeners to, you know, take things into their own hands as far as, you know, monitoring their blood work and getting their tests. And actually speaking to all of this, because I'm always getting blood tests to see where I'm at with everything. Interestingly, my last set of labs, I got the lab results back and they didn't seem right. Like certain levels didn't seem like they were even possible. And I reached out to the lab company and I was like, is it possible these are incorrect? They reviewed it and agreed and sent me a new test slip because they said it probably was wrong. I don't know. I guess it just speaks to the importance of having lots of eyes on things in the future, you know, both human and artificial intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is a great point and it's great illustration for so many things. Like, and one of the things, always ask for second and third opinion. And that's okay to pay extra for that because right now we're living in a world of medicine, which is done only by humans. That's why, you know, humans can make a mistake. We all can make a mistake. So that's why I do think it's important to be like really proactive in getting this second or third opinion. If you are in a difficult health condition or you think it's in a difficult health condition, I think it's illustration of my other point that we outsource so many health-related decisions to other parties, which potentially could, you know, have a conflict of interest. And I'm not blaming that, right? Like healthcare providers, insurance companies, big pharma, big food, governments as well. And I'm not saying you should be like the only one to make decisions on your own health, but you should be part of conversation. So I do think it's time to take responsibility and actually, well, enjoy it. Take responsibility for our own health. That's the opportunity.
Hi, friends. Would you like to have the most epic eating experience? I'm talking eradicate bloating and better absorb your nutrients. If so, you need digestive enzymes. These are one of my most favorite supplements out of everything I take, and I truly cannot imagine my life without them. Digestive enzymes are key to break down your food into usable nutrition, and to stop things like bloating, digestive distress, constipation, all the things. That's why I created Avalon X Digest, and you can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at avalonx.us. You can also get a subscription and save 15%, which you can pause or cancel at any time. Friends, I worked so hard to create the perfect blend of enzymes for Avalon X Digest. It's a full-spectrum, plant-based enzyme blend with proteases to help you break down protein, amylase for carbs, lipase for fats, cellulase for fiber, and so much more. In fact, there are 13 different types of enzymes in this blend. I cannot tell you how many people have told me that when they take Avalon X Digest, they experience no digestive distress with meals. These are truly game changers. And for any of you guys looking to up your protein intake, Avalon X Digest will help you actually break down and assimilate your protein so you get more protein from your meals. I wanted to create the highest potency enzymes so that you get all of these benefits when you eat with no problematic fillers or ingredients. Avalon X Digest is also tested multiple times for purity and potency, comes in glass bottles, and is truly the best enzymes on the market. And again, you can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at avalonx.us.
I agree so, so much. Actually, something that you were talking about with humans being the one programming the programs for the AI, something I'm actually a little bit concerned about, and I'd be curious your thoughts on this, is the potential role of gender bias in AI. Like I was reading studies that Google, for example, with their algorithms will show higher paying jobs to males rather than females, for example, in search results. And then just in the health world, historically, I think a lot of studies have been done on males. Do you think that's a potential issue, or there'll be a more equalization of studying gender? What do you think about the role of gender?
This is an extremely interesting topic, and this might be the topic for my next book.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. I'm so excited.
Yeah. 2 years ago, I discovered, and I have to admit, I'm not proud of it, but I discovered the world of women health. It was in conversation with few females, amazing entrepreneurs, and we just started to talk about longevity, and I realized that some of our trials has been done by white males with white males, and they kind of assume it's work for everyone. And if you speak to someone beside you, if you're a man and you speak to the woman beside you, you can realize that's the world of health and longevity for a woman. It's just completely different. It has so many different perspectives. So it's different in terms of reproductive health, and woman has much bigger commitment time-wise and effort-wise and resources-wise for reproduction. For men, aging is a slow process starting in the age of 40 or 45. For women, it's like a step change in menopause. For women, it's completely different degree of hormonal volatility. It's all about cycles, like including the monthly one. Woman is responsible for 80% of health-related decisions for the family and community. There's just a bigger degree of responsibility on the family level and for and the health of other generations, like parents or kids. And I just rediscovered this whole fascinating world for me 2 years ago. So that's why my dream is, and I'm still haven't decided about the next book, is to look at longevity gaps between men and women through the different, for people of different colors and for people who are economically disadvantaged or living in the poor or in the rich regions or in the zip codes. Some of the neighboring zip codes in US and in the UK have a lifespan difference of 15 years. Can you imagine that? Or difference in the lifespan country by country can be like 10 years, 15 years as well. So I think it's a fascinating topic, and we need to learn from so many humans that we have on Earth rather than just assuming it's all the world is white and full of men.
Are you seeing now changes as far as including women more and more in trials?
Do I see that? Yes. I think it's the level of 2 or 5% that I would expect we need to make a change.
So what do you think it'll take? Like the way the system is currently set up, clearly it's sustaining itself the way it is with studying males. Is there some sort of catalyst that would make it necessary to include women more?
Yes. So I do think the change will come not from the old players doing the new things. It's going to be new players disrupting the whole system. That's why, I mean, obviously the theme of big tech like Apple, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, it's controversial for some of the people. But what I like about them, they looking at health as a new opportunity, but also they looking at the issues of our health in a very digital way. So they have an opportunity for personalization. And this personalization goes far beyond a couple of gender types that we thought we had in the world. It's an opportunity. And then it might be an opportunity, it's going to be like male, female, or an opportunity to have a precise version of healthcare and medicine, which is designed for you. Well, I do believe that the largest healthcare companies on earth in 10 years from now are going to be called Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google. And unless the government and the society realize that we have amazing opportunity to leverage our human health data, making sure we protect the privacy of that. But it's just transformational for human beings. Like US, and I say it with a lot of love, has the most inefficient, the most expensive healthcare system on earth. We spend 18% of GDP on healthcare. This is awful. And the results are, not to the degree that we all deserve and expect. UK which has longer lifespan, it spends 8% of GDP. Singapore, which shares the top two place on earth in terms of the health span and lifespan with Japan, spends 5% of its GDP on healthcare. We have an opportunity to disrupt healthcare costs. Imagine if we can save like 9% of GDP, like a half of healthcare cost. How many beautiful things we can do for the world and for US as well?
Actually, and you just touched on something that I really did want to ask you about, and that is the whole privacy factor. You were talking in the book about how like the price of different things on the black market and how people's health data is shockingly more, it's worth so much more than other things. So what is the role of privacy and everything? And what do people do with this health data that they're selling? Like, why do people buy it on the black market?
Yeah. So what is happening? Science and technology became much more digital these days. So to draw conclusions, you need to have a massive number of health data samples. Okay. And they're not easily available today. And I'll explain in a second why is that. So if you have, well, like mine or yours health data, it just in isolation would not be so valuable. But if you think about the database of very, and that's a question, very comprehensive health data records, it goes up in the sky. So people are looking for the like a higher number of data, which present the data from, you know, thousands or 10,000 people. And this is where it becomes valuable for medical research, for developing different technologies. You can test so many hypotheses on that. So this is one thing. Well, the other thing, why is that such a problem? And why is that is so expensive? Think about this. In some of the healthcare systems in US, 60% of exchange of information between hospitals or between hospitals and insurance company is done by fax machine. Can you imagine that?
Every time they ask me to fax my records or something, I'm like, we're still in this age of faxing?
Yeah. So when was the last time you've seen fax machine? I couldn't really remember this time. Yeah. But like, imagine this is not digital. This is analog, right? This is just you know, picture copy of your data records. And it works against us. Like in my office, I have like a bookshelf on all my data records and they all on paper and they all from, I don't know, 10, 20 different places, 10, 20 different doctors. This is awful. There's no like central data repository. And some countries building that, like Iceland, Finland, UK, Singapore. And that's the it needs to be done on the government level and it needs to be regulated. And this is how we can protect our privacy. We can leverage this for our own benefit and not in the form of us receiving like hundreds or $1,000 for our health data set. Like the gain that we will get from decrease of the healthcare cost is just going to be amazing and enormous.
So that will actually protect our privacy, having all of that information somewhere?
Yeah, I do think, I mean, if you approach this from the government level, this will be, the solution going to be much more balanced if you outsource it to the big tech, because big tech and has a very controversial relationship with privacy. I'm still for the big tech. I think my kind of convenience and efficiency gain by using my smartphone from Apple is much bigger than the threat of me losing the privacy. And I don't do anything which I would hide from the world anyway. But then I, rather than relying on my common sense, I would rely on regulation and the role of the government and healthcare authorities.
Well, actually speaking to that, I personally had sort of a paradigm shift in that whole world because I used to think, oh, everything is safest if it's with me physically, like I have it in my apartment, lock and key. But then I got broken into and they took all my stuff and my hard drive. And I was like, oh, it actually would have been better to have had it all like in a cloud-based system where I can, you know, turn on and off access. I actually now feel safer using that modality. So that does make sense.
Yeah, that's true. And what I realized the first time I went to Singularity University, set up by Ray Kurzweil and Peter Diamantis, two of the people who actually wrote the foreword for the book, like one of the lectures was about privacy. And in a nutshell, the whole takeaway was that, guys, you should assume there's nothing private in this world anymore. And I obviously, I mean, it's not that bad. Like whatever I do today, I should be able to explain to anyone. So that's just my paradigm. It was difficult to accept that, and I still don't want to believe in that, but that's the reality of today.
I had a huge debate. I was like, should I get one of those apps that holds all of your passwords, you know, safely in one thing? I actually do, I don't know. I feel like accepting all of it, and I feel better now using those modalities. So, and I do think it's probably the way of the future. So we shall see. You talked about precision medicine and, you know, making things really customized and unique. So I think, because you talk in your book about a lot of DIY diagnostics and wearables, and I do think that is probably out of all the insane stuff you talk about in your book that maybe some of my listeners have, you know, have started to play around with. Like I'm wearing a CGM right now, for example. What do you think is the future of all of that? And what are things listeners can do right now? Like I mentioned the CGM.
Okay. So, I mean, remember my checkup day this year was June 8th. You should see me on a June 9th. I was just full of sensors. And think about this. Like the car that you're driving is so full of sensors. You can understand like a big and even a small problem happening. Why we couldn't apply the same approach to human body and mind? And we're starting to use that in our context. So like I'm wearing continuous glucose monitor as well. Well, it's actually entertaining. I'm very healthy at my age of 49, but to understand that, you do it. So this is what I do. Once a year, I do Zeopat. And this is, I think it's a device produced by iRhythm. This is a device you put on your chest, and it has a chip, and it does electrocardiogram monitoring for like 7 days in a row on your body. The only inconvenience, you couldn't swim in the swimming pool for long, but you can take showers, do other sport. And that's amazing. Then you take it away, you ship it to the company, and they decode this and look how your heart works. What else? I'm using Oura Ring to look at my sleep cycles, because after reading Matthew Walker and Why We Sleep book, I changed my mind completely on the importance of sleep. I'm a big fan. I'm actually wearing, you should see me, Whoop on one hand and like Apple Watch on the other hand. I'm experimenting a lot with that. And I do believe, if you think about wearables, we tend to think about wearables as like things which counts our steps and show us time and notifications. It's not anymore. It's our personalized healthcare device. I do believe it's like Samsung, Apple Watch, you know, Whoop, Fitbit, will add a couple of features in the next 2 or 3 years, like continuous glucose monitoring and like a blood pressure monitor. And I do believe this is like a 90% of the data that you want to collect and monitor about the work of your body. And so I was on Fitbit for so many years, and I still miss my Fitbit time, but I switched to Apple Watch because Apple is investing a lot in the healthcare. And I've just seen the report last year from Morgan Stanley saying that Apple might do like 50% of their revenue from healthcare by the end of this decade. So they're very serious about investing in that. And they can solve so many different problems, you know, done by old players. I'm still looking at the options to track the work of my brain. So I'm not really ready to discuss that. But this whole role of wearables and sensors are transformational, and we need to start as soon as possible. So fast forward like 20 years from now or 30 years from now, I call it, in the far horizon of longevity, I call it Internet of Bodies. Like you're obviously familiar with Internet of Things concept, when, you know, all the devices are interconnected and connected to the global network, it's going to be distributed anyway. Same thing will happen with our body and with our bodies. We're all going to be full of sensors. We're all going to be connected to the global distributed network, which is going to be responsible for mining our data and giving us important conclusions, important warnings about the diseases that are not even at early stage, they're just the beginning in our body. And we'll be able to manage and fight that. And obviously, this will be a huge boost for our own productivity and health and happiness and longevity.
for listeners, they know I love my Oura ring. It's one of my favorite things. And I'll put links in the show notes to interviews I've done with them. Yeah, so I think listeners will be pretty familiar with all those things, which is incredible. Do you think as far as the monitoring, because I can see how, you know, monitoring the body, like you said, constantly for all of these diseases and things like that, I can see how that would be great for predicting or finding acute illnesses. What I'm wondering about is like degenerative illnesses. Is there the potential for, you know, metabolic disease? Like, is there a solution for that in the pharmaceutical world? Or do you think lifestyle changes are, you know, what it's going to take to reverse those types of issues?
Yeah, I'm wearing two hats. One is like investor and the guy who is a big fan of science and technology. And the other one is a human being. So while we've seen some drugs actually recently approved to fight obesity, but I hate the idea of people eating industrial and processed food, increasing significantly their calories intake, suffering from obesity, and then needed to take drugs against that. This is just, we're just trying to replace this whole beautiful, like a vessel and beautiful, all the beautiful processes that Mother Nature gave to us, and which we can use. So I do believe lifestyle changes and then like a diet changes, physical activity changes, are like the best way to manage that.
Wasn't lifespan down for the first time recently?
Here in the US.
Just the US?
Yeah. So, well, that's why I say this is we have... And again, unfortunately, and with a lot of love, and it's nothing to do with doctors, actually. U.S. is almost like the only developed country on earth where in the last 5 years, pre-COVID, we had a decline of life expectancy and a lifespan for like 3 years out of five.
Wow. What do you think that says about the future of everything with, you know, the U.S. having a lot of these advances in technology, if it's not panning out?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I'm not really in the field of, so I have European passport. So I don't think I have like a moral right to criticize U.S. political and regulatory system. And then like a lot of innovations coming out from U.S. because whatever things you invent, it's superior to the current practice and current cost and current efficiency. So that's a huge efficiency gain. But I think it just reconfirmed my point that disruption will come from the direction that we don't expect this to come, like a big tech or, you know, scientific and technological innovation happening in Boston, which I think is biotech capital of the world, or from LA and San Diego and Silicon, like from Silicon Valley, like California. But I do believe this is an opportunity for us to switch from biological to more engineering view to human health. And therefore, the science and technology will play a significant role to disrupt this whole thing.
Okay, gotcha. Something else we didn't touch on yet, but it's a huge topic. And it's something else in the anti-aging field. And that's the role of stem cell therapy. Are you investing in any companies that work with stem cells?
No, we don't. So, you know, obviously stem cells are important, you know, for our overall health and for our audience. Stem cell therapy is just the use of the stem cells to treat or prevent, you know, particular disease or condition. For some of the reason from regulatory perspective, U.S. has very strict view on approval and review of stem cells therapies. People started to abuse that. And there's just, I think it's just a handful stem cells therapies or interventions approved for the use in the U.S. for very specific medical conditions, not for the general use. I'm usually, when people ask me, like, do I need to do this stem cells injection urgently? Do I need to go to Mexico or to the islands nearby, close to Florida to do that? I'm just saying, like, if you're going to stay on longevity bridge for another 10 to 20 years, just by applying the current technologies, current approved therapies, taking care of your lifestyle choices, well, it's just life extension for another 10 to 20 years anyway. So do that and wait another 5 to 7 years until we'll get more clarity on the stem cells, particularly on the side effect of it, and we can use that. So I'm really conservative with that. I know some people, obviously, I'm part of the biohacking community, of longevity community, even transhumanist community, while I'm not embracing immortality at all or cryogenic preservation. And obviously, I've been offered to do like a stem cell procedure so many times in my life, but I've never done so. I'm 49, and I do believe like for the next 10, 20 years, I'm going to be fine, just making sure I use all the opportunity that science, early diagnostic, checkups, lifestyle changes can offer me.
Do you do any of the banking of cells?
No, I haven't done this.
So if this 10 to 20 years thing, so is it basically the concept that if we can make it 10 to 20 years, there'll be radical advances?
Yeah, this is, I think Ray Kurzweil said it, like you just need to live long enough to live forever. You don't need to live forever. This is our choice. I think it's the next 10, 15 years is going to be super critical. And we need to survive, and not only survive, but manage our level of health, both physical and mental one. We didn't discuss this today, but we should. I think it's super important. And you will enjoy this next 10, 15 years, just going on a discovery road, how your body works, how your mind works, and what you can do to influence that. What are your lifestyle choices? What are the new pieces of technologies and diagnostic? This is a brave new world, and we can really prosper there. And then in 10, 15, like a 20 years time, the world going to be full of completely different technologies and scientific discoveries that we can significantly and fundamentally change the way we age and even do like age reversal measured by set of biomarkers. And we'll be able to break the sound barrier of 122 years.
Hey friends, I'm about to tell you how to get 10% off the ideal coffee when it comes to supporting your health. So if you guys know me, you know I am obsessed with optimizing basically everything I consume, and that especially relates to coffee. Did you know that coffee is one of the most powerful sources of antioxidants in the modern diet? And yet, not all coffee is created equal. Between sourcing, farming practices, roasting, and contaminants, there can be a huge difference in the health impact of the coffee that you drink. That is exactly why I created Glow Coffee. Glow Coffee is a premium, specialty-grade Arabica coffee sourced from sustainable women-led farms in Colombia. It's organically grown, and we third-party test it meticulously, like every single lot, for purity. And what makes Glow especially exciting from a biohacking perspective is that we specifically made it to be rich in chlorogenic acid, or CGA. That's one of coffee's primary, most potent antioxidant compounds that has been studied for its role in metabolic health, inflammation, oxidative stress, and so much more. The elevation levels of the beans, how they're grown, and how they're roasted all affect CGA levels. So we searched high and low to find the perfect beans naturally high in CGA and tested them to confirm that, and then we roast those beans to preserve the CGA content. And then test after that as well. Coffee is already one of the potentially biggest contributors of antioxidants in the human diet, so I designed Glow Coffee to maximize those benefits while keeping it incredibly clean and high quality. And this coffee is so clean. It's grown organically, of course, but then we go even farther than that. We third-party test the beans for almost 100 toxic compounds, including pesticides, heavy metals, and mold. Oh, and perhaps the best part is it is absolutely delicious. We're talking smooth, low bitterness. It's honestly the exact coffee I personally want to drink every single day of my life. It's so bright, smooth, and delicious that it's also perfect black for fasting. No added sweeteners or cream needed. You can also splash it on your face for an antioxidant-rich toner. I do that every single day. After the sauna, after the shower, all the things. I created Glow Coffee because it's really about upgrading one of our most common daily habits into something that truly supports your health and performance. You can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. That's 10% off Glow Coffee with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. Are you ready to glow inside and out? Fuel your day, illuminate your way. That's glowcoffeeco.com.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most exciting things for me personally. I mean, I'm nowhere near in the extent that you're in it, but just, you know, experimenting with all of these biohacking technologies and wearables and devices and things. And it's really, really exciting to, you know, learn more about your own biology and how to, quote, biohack it. And I just think it's a grand fun time. And I love bringing listeners along for the ride. So another question about the future of all of this. In the book, you have a very substantial section on the potential concerns people might have of what this future might look like. So what do you think this future will look like as far as like humanity as a species? Will it create a new species? Will we have new social classes? Will the power system get disrupted? Are there concerns with all of that?
Yeah. So I call it Morality of Immortality. It's the last chapter of my book. Well, second to last, because I have a bonus chapter, which is twice as long as any other chapter in the book called Who Wants to Live Forever? Like 10 longevity choices that you should do today, not to wait for another 10 years. And funny enough, like when I submitted it, and it's a chapter about the ethics of longevity, the ethics of today's world. When I submitted it to the publisher, the initial feedback was like, sir, can you just take out this chapter? And I'm like, why? And no, actually, I thought they just hate this whole ethical idea. No, it's not. They said it deserves to be a separate book. But then obviously, what I told them, like every chapter, all 12 chapters of my book deserve to be like a separate book, because nothing is more complex than human biology and human ethics. So they agree to that. What I'm saying is, if you ask people in US and UK today, and I'm using that because I have a data for that, whether they want to extend their lifespan, 65 to 75% of people say no. This was really shocking to me. I actually was in Vatican and a conference, and I had the audience with Pope Francis back in 2018. And like, even if you ask like the best doctors in the world, and this is the conference that I attended, like 80% of them say no. Why is that? So I do believe that we were like so focused on the science and technology, but we were not really focused on redefining the world, redefining the social norms, redefining our ethics. So a lot of people don't want to live and like extend their life in this version of the world. I'm always saying we have managed to create a science and technology that can extend our life, but we haven't created the life that we want to extend. And the time is now. We need to start a global conversation around our, you know, ethics and moral choices, how we change the world for us to like and love the idea of living longer. There's so many things that we need to fix, like inequality. We did discuss that. And again, I just couldn't really explain through my altruistic and idealistic mind why people living nearby in two zip codes, which are really like next to each other, should have a lifespan difference of 15 years. And like some of the regions, like neighboring regions in London, have even a bigger longevity gap. Why is that? Like right to receive healthcare, like in the most efficient and technological version of healthcare, should be basic human right. I actually believe we have so many dividing themes in today's society. A longevity and an affordable version of longevity can be one of the few unifying themes which will solve the inequality gap for people. So that's one. Well, the other one is our social structure, marriage, career, retirement has been created when we all were living somewhere between like a 50 and 65 years. So your life paradigm was completely different. So like we need to have the answers to the questions like, what will happen if I outlive my children? Or what do I do with kids from multiple generations? How our marriage institution should evolve. 2/3 of the marriages go through divorce in the first 5 or 7 years. This is awful. And so we need to redefine that. Will it be like a kids raising partnership with more degree of responsibility, even legal responsibility of two parents? Might be the case. I don't know the answer, right? I'm not in a position to define the answers. We need to do this collectively. Like, what will happen with my career? Will I have as many careers as decades in my life? That's just the other question we need to solve. Or our relationship with Mother Nature. When I say we need to take back responsibility for our health, I also mean not only our health, but the health of our planet. Like, if you live in 65 years old, you have an opportunity to live irresponsibly. Like you can drop plastic in the ocean and think, okay, you know, next generation will sort it out. But we all gonna live to 150 years. We will face the consequences of our own actions. Is it an opportunity for us to adopt more responsible approach to relationship with the planet? Yes.
It's a really beautiful chapter, and I'm really excited for listeners to read it because it just really makes you think about so many things. And I thought it was a very balanced approach to it because obviously whenever you have a conversation about ethics, it's very easy to get on one intense polarizing side of things. But I thought you painted a really clear objective picture of where things are going and optimistic. I didn't even realize, I love that you pointed out, like, for example, pollution, we often think is, you know, getting worse and worse. But you talked about NASA doing studies and seeing that, was it pollution that was down or deforestation or?
Yeah. So if you look at two largest countries on Earth, in terms of population, so it's India and China, I think they have both have somewhere around 1.4 billion these days. The forest area in these both countries increased by 10% in the last 10 years. Well, that's amazing. One of the key messages that I convey in the context of longevity revolution, that environment around us is becoming more longevity friendly and more health friendly. I don't know if you know, but like invention of cyber crime made streets safer.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, in some of these cities, I mean, obviously they probably were pretty dangerous cities. Street crime went down by a factor of 3 to 5 in the last 15 to 20 years. Can you imagine that? Well, it's partly because it's just much easier to do a harm to us in the cyber network area, in the internet, through the internet, rather than in real life. So that's one thing. But there's so more. I do have more positive examples like driverless cars. So if your car is managed by a computer, not by you, mortality rates drop by a factor of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is for even like for today's level of development, driverless car, and they're going to be more and more safer. If you listen to the news today, you think the world is falling apart. It's not. There's never been a beautiful time to live in the world. Even today's in post-COVID time. And it's a time for renewal and rethinking. Or what was that? Like electric buses on the street. 2 years ago, I don't have a recent numbers. Like China had 500,000 electric buses on the streets. And I think at this time, US had like 2,000 or so. So we need to work on that as well. Hopefully it's just getting better and better. Or plant-based meat and fish. If we will replace the animal protein with plant-based protein, not for everyone, if you kind of fancy of consuming it, that's a huge gain because industrial meat contains a lot of things that shouldn't be there, like antibiotics, like growth hormones, like E. coli bacteria. I was just speaking to the head of Human Longevity Clinic in San Diego, my question was, what's your biggest concern? I'm 100% sure it's just the amount of sugar that we take with sugar drinks and all the industrial food that we consume. They said, no, our biggest concern is that we're becoming resistant to antibiotics. Because imagine that. I think it's 70% of antibiotics in the U.S. is consumed by animals and by fish on the farms, not by, you know, us directly. That's a ridiculous number.
Like, I know a lot of my audience is not vegan or vegetarian, but I think like the abysmal state of conventional agriculture is, I mean, it's just really, really terrible. It makes me sad that it gets, you know, if you have an animal inclusive diet, that often gets lumped in, like it gets associated with the conventional agriculture system, which is just so problematic. So I'm glad that people are becoming more and more aware of all of that. What about the actual population of the planet and the sustainability, just space-wise, food-wise?
Yeah. So what are the concerns that people have around longevity or extreme longevities? And concern number one is it going to be available for everyone? So, and my promise, yes. The technologies and scientific discoveries that we're investing in through Longevity Vision Fund, and we are not the only ones to support the space. We have a brilliant community of enthusiasts in the science, technology, entrepreneurship, even in on the regulatory front. Like the efficiency gain that we get through using these technologies is improvement by 10 to 20, but not percent, times. Imagine that. So I do believe it's going to be affordable and accessible for everyone. And it's due to technology, not because we will just collectively decrease the prices and regulate the prices. So that's one. The second piece, like, will we have enough resources? And like two biggest resource constraints that we actually have in our mind. This is like the only place that we don't have abundance of resources is our mindset. So if you speak about energy, the cost of renewable energy production decreased exponentially in the last 10, 20 years. So that's, I'm not worried about this one. I think it's China and India made a decision a few years ago to close hundreds coal electricity generating plants. And funny enough, if you go to Beijing, I haven't been there for the last 3 years, but like the skies there, you can see the skies and pollution is decreased quite substantially. If you look at this, I'm not concerned about energy. I'm not concerned about food because if you look at statistics, 45% of food in US goes to waste from our households, from supermarkets, from restaurants. Again, this is insane. We can just leverage this, even if we can leverage like one fifth of this to feed people. I mean, it's going to be amazing. And we overeating anyway. Like, there's a lot of disagreement in the scientific community what extends our life today, but there's only one agreement that caloric restriction, taking and consuming less calories, like 15 to 25% less than the usual intake, actually extends your healthy lifespan by 3, 5, or even like 7 years, depending on the study. So I'm not concerned about food. Then the next question is like, what are we going to do with overpopulation? And we've done enough studies to show some striking and shocking numbers, how population of Earth will evolve in the next 80 years. So if you look at one of the best ones, I think it was published in Lancet journal early last year. So what has happened? Reproduction rates per female in majority of countries in the world, with exception of a few countries in the African continents, is well below 2. So what will happen if you do like mathematical model of how population of Earth will evolve, this will increase to 10, 11 billions from today's 8 by year 2050. And in the end of this century, we will have only 8 billion people on the planet. China will lose 600 million people from its population if they don't respond to this challenge. So they're going to go down from 1.4 billion to 800 million people. And the same happening and same will happen all around the world. Think about this. So it's not like we have an option to work on longevity and increase the quality of people who turn 60 or 70. It's almost like we just need to respond to these external shocks that we actually self-created. So that's the idea. So unless we work on that, we're going to be declining, you know, the planet, by the end of the century, we're going to be the planet with declining population.
Will it plateau at that number or it'll keep declining?
Look, I mean, frankly speaking, and we all do know the value or the lack of value of long-term planning in this world. So I don't think we need to like take these figures at the face value, but it's important demographic trend. We would need to sort this out. I do believe we will work on that, and it's going to be a lot of response from a lot of countries on, or even on the global level, to sustain demographics and for us still to be in a good numbers population-wise. But that's like a matter of decades of focus and working all together.
Is it a good thing, though, that it's trending down if our lifespan is trending up? Like if it was opposite, where it was going up and our lifespan was going up, then we would maybe be more in trouble?
Yeah, look, I don't know. It's in a way, it's artificial problem.
Like cancels each other out.
Yeah. So I have so many things on my plate, like Longevity Vision Fund, Age Reversal X Prize, like the global competition, pro bono competition for Age Reversal, like a book, like Longevity at Work pro bono program I'm doing with the largest corporation. I'm looking for countries to implement national longevity program. Again, this is all free of charge. Everything I do in longevity is my contribution to the world. you know, 4 kids. And so that's why I'm just trying to limit like a number of problems I'm trying to solve at the same time. So, well, this is the scenario that we need to respond to that.
Okay. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Sergey. This has been absolutely incredible. And it's mind-blowing all that you're doing for humanity. I cannot thank you enough. Was there anything you wanted to particularly draw attention to that we didn't touch on?
So I'd like to stay in touch. So go to sergeyyoung.com. We have an amazing offer for book pre-order. You're going to have access to 12 videos called Longevity Video Academy. Well, and it's each video is 10, 12 minutes where I speak about different aspects of longevity from today to like long-term future. So I'd like to offer that, and this is free of charge. If you don't want to buy the book, that's okay. Go stay connected. We have plenty of stuff we're doing in newsletters. But my main takeaway is the following. We're all going to live longer or much longer than we expect. So now it's the time to refine and rediscover and revisit our view on our own health and the health of our community, our country, and our planet. It's time to take back responsibility. And I can tell you, it's not a difficult road. It's just amazing road full of discoveries about your own health and the health of the people around you, how you can manage that. And this will make you healthy and happy.
Thank you so much. That is so incredible. Literally, you just embody and envision everything I learn about and share with listeners. So I cannot thank you enough for your work. Open door anytime you want to come back on the show. I'm really excited about your next book. For listeners, we'll put links to everything that we talked about in the show notes. And again, the show notes will be at melanieavalon.com/longevity. So Sergey, thank you so much. This was incredible. We'll have to stay in touch and talk more in the future.
We should. Thanks, Melanie. Thanks, everyone. Stay healthy and happy.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. For more information, you can check out my book, What When Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo-Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine, as well as my blog, melanieavalon.com. Feel free to contact me at podcast@melanieavalon.com. And always remember, you got this.